Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
I'm Jay.
And this is your new comic book episode for February 24th, 2021. I remember what day it is. Crazy day. yeah, I don't know how you guys felt about this week. There was a lot of books to read, but I didn't feel like anything stood out. So I don't know. It kind of felt like a meh week for me. There were some books that stood out for being terrible, but that's because DC is still putting out Future State. But I don't know. Nothing really jumped out and grabbed me. So anyway, we'll kick it off with you, Jay. What's the first book you want to talk about?
Well, we might as well go with Future State. We'll do Superman House of L. It's written by Philip Johnson, art by Scott Golubski, color by Gabriel El Tabel.
El Tab, yeah.
That's it. And letters by ALW's Troy Petrie.
Troy Petrie?
Petrie, yes. The story pretty much takes in the future, obviously. They're on the moon. They got a fortress of sanctuary up there. And they're pretty much getting ready for a big threat that's coming in from outer space. They took this threat that is led by called the Red King. He's leading a bunch of troops and to Earth to conquer it. And you pretty much have all of the Superman family, you know, it's different groups put together to fight for like a last battle stand against the Red King. Brainiac 4 is in that with the group. And then pretty much it's a bunch of fight scenes in there going back and forth. You don't find out to the very end who the Red King is. Kind of a surprise. And then of course we have the main character show up at the very end of the storyline, and it was just, I guess, a one shot deal because it just says the end and that was it.
Yeah. So I heard one shot, and then I heard somebody, I saw a creator on social media talking about, yeah, I'm working on the next issue of House of L. So I'm not sure how that works. Maybe they're going to come back to it. I was kind of looking forward to this. So, you know, we had Philip Kennedy Johnson on the show, and you know, a lot of the things he was saying, I was like, okay, maybe Superman's not going to be, you know, like I was disappointed. I'll just put it out there. I was disappointed it wasn't Mark Waid. You know, I haven't read that much Philip Kennedy Johnson stuff. I did really like Kill a Man that he did with Steve Orlando, but for the most part, I just haven't read a lot of his stuff. And then, you know, I hear he's on Superman, and a lot of the stuff he's saying, it just wasn't clicking for me. But we had him on the show, and, you know, I was trying to stay positive and be excited. But I didn't feel like the Future State War of the Worlds or War World or whatever it's called was any good. I didn't like it. And he was talking about the second issue. Oh, you know, the first issue is how we feel about Superman. Second issue is how Superman feels about us. Like, it just doesn't – it's not engaging. It's boring to me. I didn't think the second issue was good, but I was like, okay, House of L is the one that he really, like, saying he put, like, his all into, whatever. And I read it, and I was like – I was bored. I'm bored. This isn't like you're talking about the legacy of Superman and children or whatever. And it was like, the problem is there's no connection that's been established between all these supposed descendants of Superman. Why should I care about any of them? Just because you tell me they're descendants of Superman, just because their last name, you know, is E-L, that doesn't automatically make me care about them. So yeah, I thought it was pretty poor showing. And the Red King showing up. The other thing I thought about was, remember in the Green Lantern, the horrible Future State Green Lantern issues, they were talking about a Red King.
Right.
And Orion showed up, and it seemed like Orion was supposed to be the Red King, and now we're supposed to find out it's this other guy who shows up here. Like, I don't know what the hell's going on over at DC. All I know is I was really disappointed because Superman's my favorite character, you know? And after Bendis, I thought, well, come on, give me some good Superman stories, and doesn't seem like we're going to get him. So I don't know. I didn't like it. Doesn't sound.
Yeah. Like, I didn't really connect with the characters because they didn't really give enough backstory. Like, well, who's this? Who's that? And like, okay, so I don't get it, but whatever.
Yeah. The only,
and it's just leaves you like, what, that's it.
Yeah, well, the only character I cared about was it was Brainiac 4, but at least I felt a little investment in him because, you know, I know who Brainiac 5 is. He's a character that I know. So at least there was a little bit of connection there, but the rest of the characters were just, they're like, why do I care about these characters? They're brand new. Just because their last name's L doesn't automatically mean that I have any emotional attachment to these characters. I don't know. I just thought it was poorly done. So, anyway, Manny, what do you have up next?
Let's get this one out of the way, shall we? I have The Next Batman, Second Son, written by John Ridley with artwork by Tony Adkins, ink by Mark Morales, colors by Rex Locas. Cover art by Doug Braithwaite, which is kind of what intrigued me. I thought that we were going to get more of that, but it was just a cover. And it did interest me because I thought that we, number one, the name John Ridley for me, I keep thinking that in, the other history of the DC universe and, some of the other stuff he does. And although it hasn't been very good, with Future State and the Next Batman and things like that, it was all right. It wasn't horrible. So now we're supposed to get like a backstory about Tim Fox, who we've spent a couple of weeks getting to know as Jace, but no, now we're back to Tim Fox. So this is supposed to be his origin story. It's supposed to be a digital first. Although so the book really is a failed heist and nothing happens. And this is supposed to be something that it's supposed to lead into Infinite Frontier, and it's supposed to answer questions about him. And as a comic book reader, if I have to pay for this book, which is a cover price of $4.99, I'm pissed because it is not worth your money at all.
Yeah, I don't think it's that much, first of all, because it's a digital first. So I think the digital first are a lot cheaper. Although they are going to release
The
this.
yeah the cover price that I had that well the cover that I'm looking at right here, it does say $4.99.
Yeah, but it's not going to be just one chapter. Like when they collect a digital first, it's usually because it's formatted differently. So even though if you read the digital first, it says it's 25 pages, it's not really 25 pages, because when you format it for print, it like cuts it in half. So two pages of the digital equals one page of a print comic. So I think you need like three or four chapters of a digital comic to make one print comic. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's
So
still
yeah, so
dumb.
I get what you're saying. Like my thing about it, the reason I didn't like it is because, like Manny said, there's no story here. Like
Nope.
it's so short.
It is really vague.
And so, I could see his point. Like, hey, this isn't much of a story for $4.99. You're gonna get a lot more. You're gonna get three or four chunks of story about this size if you want to pay for it. But I guess I should have realized. It says right there, Next Batman, Second Son. So Next Batman, we know is Tim or Jace Fox, whatever he wants to call himself. The second son is apparently Luke. So I mean, we've already had Luke as Batwing, so I'm not sure why we're retelling. But the whole thing about it is, I've said this before, like DC kind of screwed John Ridley, like with all their different form. Hey, we're gonna do that. We're gonna do 5G. No, we're gonna do Future State. No, we're gonna do digital first. Like, what you should have done is you should have just given him a book and called it The Foxes, because apparently that's the family that he wants to tell the story of. And I don't really care that much about the Foxes, to be honest with you. Like I've said a bunch of times that this feels like he's telling us like a story like Empire, like the show on Fox. Like, I'm not saying that because it's Fox Network, but it's a African American family, and there's all these different dynamics, and there's all these different drama, and people are keeping secrets from each other, like soap opera, whatever. That's boring. That is not Batman to me. Like, I want to read about Batman, and if you're putting somebody else under the cowl, that's fine. It still has to be Batman, not this family drama kind of thing. And it seems like that's what he's doing. And I just don't have any interest in that. I just don't. So, like, was somebody clamoring to know more about Lucius Fox and his family? Like, I don't get it. I'd rather he just would have pulled in some other African-American guy and thrown him under the cowl instead of, I just don't understand. Like, I don't get it. It's to me, this whole next Batman thing is not working at all. It makes me just not even want to see, like, I used to like Lucius Fox as a character. Now I just want all the Foxes to go away. I don't care. Stop cluttering up my comic rack. I don't care. Maybe there are people that are enjoying it. I don't know. But again, I do think, like, maybe I would have enjoyed it more had it just been a nice, clean narrative where, you know, we start at point A and we're heading toward point B and then point C and whatever, instead of jumping around in time, and it's Jace and then it's Tim and then it's Luke and then it's, you know, now, I mean, we just had Dark Detective that came out this week, Dark Detective 4 Future State, and there's references in there about, I'm thinking of the wrong story. It was Batman Black and White, number 3, that came out today, where there was a story with Jace Fox and one of his sisters, and they were talking about how their parents hate masks now. Like, Lucius Fox was a dedicated ally of Batman for decades, and I don't care whatever bullshit happened in the Joker War. Lucius Fox is a man of integrity. He's not just going to turn on Batman, turn on masks, quote unquote, because of the Joker. Like, no, that's just lazy, bad storytelling. And I'm a fan of John Ridley. Like, don't get me wrong. His other history of the DC Universe, huge fan. And I want this stuff to succeed, but this is not working. It is bad. I don't know if he's writing it like he's trying to write a screenplay or a television show or a movie or what, but I try not to be negative most of the time, but I'm sorry. This is bad. And just because you slap the name Batman on it and say, oh, diversity, it's got an African-American under the cowl, doesn't make it good. And it has not been. The next Batman Future State has been atrocious. This digital first is bad. It's all garbage. Just my two cents. Didn't mean to go on a rant there, but man, it makes me mad because they slap Batman on something and the people just show up and just, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid. This is not good.
All right. It's part of the problem also of trying to be, you know, cultural appropriate or whatever, what's popular in media, because if anything, you're doing, you know, the African-American character is a disservice in putting them in a bad story. I mean, just because you're really just trying to force in, you know, a circle in a square and make it work, because, hey, look, this is going to sell because we're being so innovative and so different to put one of our members of the Trinity, you know, as a different race, you know, and instead what you end up doing is kind of, you know, disrespecting both with a really bad attempt instead of, you know, giving us a solid story, a solid group, because, you know, you can tell with Ridley's writing and the other history of the DC universe that the potential is there for a storytelling, but stop trying to make it with things that aren't gonna work. But it, like you said, it's just a matter of them being lazy.
Yeah, I mean, and I get it, right? You put Batman on something and it sells, and that's what DC is going for, and that's what they want to give Ridley, and they want to, you know, hey, first African American Batman. It's marketing, you know. I get that. But, like, Manny's right. Like, you want to be fair to these characters. You want to be fair to Jace Fox. Let him be his own character.
Mm-hmm.
He can debut in Batman, but let him be his own character. You know, just like his brother was Batwing. You could even have Jace be Batwing. You know, have him debut. You could okay. This wouldn't be the first time they've done this, right? You want to say Batman died? You know, not really or whatever. But hey, Batman died, and you take the title. And even though it's still technically Batman, over Batman, you just print over it, like, cross out the man and just write Wing. you know, like, hey, he's taking over the Batman title because Batman's got, like, just like when Matt Murdock supposedly died and Black Panther was Daredevil. You know, it's the same kind of thing. You can still call it Batman, or you can still say it's the Batman title. And they did it with Superman titles where, you know, Superman was supposedly dead and you had a Superboy in one of the Superman titles. You had the Eradicator in another. You had John Henry Irons Steel in another. And you had the Cyborg Superman in the fourth. Same kind of thing. You can do the same kind of thing, but let him be his own character. You're being reductive by making him Batman. And then you're shoehorning in all this other stuff. And, you know, the Fox family that I don't care about. But if you had given, you know, come up with whatever reason you want that Bruce Wayne's not under the cowl and Jace is under the cowl, and give him, you know, call him Batwing, call him whatever, come up with a name, it doesn't matter. But then after, you know, 6 months or whatever, then you can spin him out into his own title. And then it makes plenty of sense to have you're telling the story of his family with all the foxes and all their drama, whatever. And if somebody wants to read it, they can read it. It's still Batman. It's still in Gotham, whatever. But the people that don't care about the Fox family, like me, I don't have to read it, you know? So I don't know. It's just another failure on DC's part. And unfortunately, you know, we've talked about their two biggest characters, Superman and Batman, and they're kind of screwing up both of them right now. Does not bode well.
No, I mean, they've done it before. Jim Gordon was Batman for a while.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a big fan, but the way they did it, it worked. I mean, other people have, I mean, hasn't Azrael been Batman for a while? And
yeah.
And so, I mean, but
Dick Grayson was, but again, I think the problem is don't call them Batman, call them something else. I mean, we nicknamed them anyway, like, right. When Jim Gordon was Bat, wasn't it like Bat Bunny?
Bat Bunny, yeah, because I hated that suit. Yeah, that's true. But I mean, it would have made so much more sense if they would have made Luke Fox Batman, and then brought in Jason and made him Batwing. And even if there's a rivalry between them and they're fighting each other in bat costumes, it would have been so much more interesting. That Fox story would have been so much more interesting. Yep. So, but you know, here we are.
When Azrael took over for Batman, that was when Bane broke Batman's bat.
Yeah.
And everybody refers to that iteration of Batman as Azbats.
Azbats.
Azbats, yeah. AZ-Bats. So, yeah, you just give him his own damn name. All right, well, let me talk about my first book. It's from Aftershock. It's Kaiju Score, number 4 of 4, from writer James Patrick. Art is by Rem Brew. Letters are by Dave Sharp. Like I said, this is the end of the story. It's kaiju. It's a heist story. This wraps it up nice and neat. And I say it wraps it up nice and neat. This is not a nice, neat wrap up in terms of the way the entire score went. There was a lot of bumps along the road for the crew, and not everybody makes it out alive, but it ended up being a really fun story. I'm still not a big kaiju guy. But I love a good heist story. I'm glad I read this. It was interesting, and it leaves the door open for more, for a sequel. And I would definitely pick up a sequel if there was one. The art, it's a little stylized for my taste. I kind of wish that it was a little less stylized. I probably would like the art even more, but it does a good job of telling the story. It's real dynamic art, and it does work in terms of the kaiju. Art style really works for the giant monsters, not as much for the humans, in my mind. But other than that, the color work is good. Letters are great. Dialogue is good. So I definitely enjoyed it. Aftershock, man, they really, are becoming one of my favorite publishers. I mean, I give everything they do a try now because so many of their stories are so great. So anyway, I really liked it. All right, Jay, what do you have up next?
Go with DC's Black Label, Batman White Knight Presents, Harley Quinn, number 5. Art is by Mateo Scalera. Stories by Sean Murphy and Katana Collins. Colors by Dave Stewart. Letters by Ann World Design. So we pretty much leave, it goes back to the end of book 4, where you have a standoff between Hector and Scarlet. and Harley Quinn's on the side there. Little back and forth goes on. Harley goes down. Then she has like a flashback. So with the Joker, of course, because you always got to have a flashback with the Joker, I guess. She has a visit in the hospital by a friend. They do an investigation, how they're going to try to track Scarlet down. Harley there's going to be an attack. And the ending's kind of a surprise, but not really. I guess it was kind of sad. It's going to be a sad day for Harley at the end of the book.
Yeah, I'm surprised by how much I like this book.
They've done a good job with the White Knights series.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the regular White Knight one, it was okay. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Joker, as everybody knows, so it was just okay for me. But I'm also not a big fan of Harley Quinn, and I almost wasn't gonna read this, but I went ahead and I was like, let me give it a try. I think the week that the first issue came out, there wasn't a lot of books out that week, so I was like, all right, let me just give it a try. And it does with Harley what my favorite Harley stories does. Like, there's none of the zany, crazy, you know, oh puddin' Harley. Like, she's a capable, I mean, this is a little different. She's not as strong and capable as she is in, say, like Joker Harley Criminal Sanity by Cammy Garcia, but there's definitely this strength to her. And, you know, she's got a couple kids that she's juggling. And, you know, she is still in love with Jack Napier, not the Joker himself, but his alter ego. And that is, you know, still part of her. And there's a fragility to her, but there's also a strength to her. And she's a very capable and competent person, not some crazy, whacked out Harley. That's the Harley that I don't care for. Like the Harley that we see in Heroes in Crisis, you know, where she's constantly speaking in rhyme and just hitting people with her mallet or whatever. Like that Harley, that's a two-dimensional Harley to me. Like, what's the point of that? There's not. But this is this Harley is much more complex. Plus, I think the art, this is the first White Knight series we've had, I think, that isn't drawn by Sean Gordon Murphy. But Matteo Scalero is able to emulate his style like really, really well.
Yeah, you can't really tell the difference, really.
Yeah,
you gotta look.
Yeah. and usually Matteo Scalero's art is a lot cleaner than this, but he's really kind of using more of a sketchy style that looks like Sean Gordon Murphy style. So it definitely works. Yeah, I was a fan. It was a good issue. All right, Manny, what do you have up next?
Up next, I have from Image Comics, I have Two Moons, number one. Book that just right off the bat caught my attention. Just because of the fact that it's going to be an ongoing horror series. And I'm always looking for a good horror series to follow, especially one that, you know, takes place at some time in history. In this case, Two Moons by John Arcudi and with art by Valerio Giangiordano does that. It's an ongoing horror series that's set in during the Civil War. And we're going to be following a character named Virgil Morris, who is a Native American who was raised by Americans, I guess. And now he's fighting for the Union. And in between that, he discovers some of his past comebacks, his shamanic roots come back and kind of awaken something in him. And now I think things are going to start getting really, really weird. So this issue really just introduced us to him. It introduced us to the Civil War again, and kind of the setting that we're going to be seeing the story in. And so, you know, it's something that apparently is very close to Arcudi. So he's looking to raise the bar as far as indigenous people, their characters that they've played in the past, whether it, you know, they're depicted sometimes as savages or almost like as a checkpoint for travelers or things like that. So he wants to elevate that with this young Pawnee, and so I'm very, very interested to see what happens, what kind of mythical elements we get in it, and how it all ties in with the Civil War, because I'm a fan of comics that incorporate history.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read this. I really wanted to, but I ran out of time because of the day job. But it seemed like it ended kind of abruptly. Did you feel like you got a good chunk of story? Like we know what's going on, or is it more set up?
It's definitely set up.
Okay. Right on. All right. Well, I'll definitely be on board by the time issue 2 rolls around. All right. Let me move on to my next book. What I'm going to talk about. We talk about Department of Truth, number 6, written by James Tynan. We have a new artist this time. It's not the regular artist, Martin Simons. Instead, we have art by Elsa Chartier. Colors are by Matt Hollinsworth and letters by Aditya Bidikar. This is sort of the origin, if you will, of the Department of Truth. So it's interesting. It's like a flashback within a flashback. So you've got the book starting off with Lee Harvey Oswald, and it's November 24th, 1963, which in our world is the date that Lee Harvey Oswald got assassinated on live television by Jack Ruby. So it starts with that date and us kind of seeing Lee Harvey Oswald's first contact with the Department of Truth. You know, we know people that have been reading Department of Truth know he's the leader of the Department of Truth. So he's introduced to the Department of Truth, but he's given a book that sort of explains the Department of Truth that goes back. Like that's the flashback within the flashback, where he's reading the story in a book that happens thousands of years before that, before him supposedly being assassinated, that kind of tells the true origins of the Department of Truth. So it's an interesting take. It is probably my least favorite of the issues so far, only because we didn't get any kind of big story beat. Like Tynan's been really good at dropping a bombshell on us every issue of Department of Truth. Like at some point there's just something that's happened in each issue where you just go, holy crap. We didn't get that here, which is okay. I mean, you need some setup, and you know, I'm sure there's people that have been wondering, okay, well, where did the Department of Truth come from? How was it founded? And being that Martin Simons, I guess, needed a break, maybe to get caught up on artwork, bringing in Elsa Charter, I think it works to have her do, you know, things in a different style with a flashback, because even the two flashbacks, even the 1963 versus the other story, which does it have a date? I think it does. If I scroll to the beginning of it. 1000 AD. So even Elsa's art, like her 1963 art versus her 1000 AD art looks different. She's got that, you know, she's able to flip the style. So you really can tell which is in really ancient history and which is just, you know, relatively recent history. But it's a good jumping on point. If you've been hearing things about Department of Truth and wondering, hey, should I jump on? You could easily pick this up and read it and get an idea of what the series is about. And then you can go back and try to pick up the first 5 issues or go pick up the first trade, which collects those first 5 issues. So it definitely works that way as a jumping on point. So, all right, Jay, what do you have up next?
I was going to say, I like that story too. I read it. It was pretty good. I'm going to go with Image, Stray Dogs. It's chapter 1. It's called Good Girl. It's written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner, colors by Brad Simpson, letters by Tone Rodriguez. It's the first book, so it's going to be kind of just to give the baseline of the characters. So the main dog is Sophie, and there's 9 other dogs. Jeep has pretty much a bad memory. Her short-term memory is like shot. She doesn't remember things like short-term. So that's kind of leaves you going, what's going on with the storyline? She meets these dogs the first time. You know, she's always scared or whatnot. And as you follow and read this, the dogs, you know, kind of just introduce her to how things run in the family, how things are, you know, how things work, and like a tour of the house. You find out that she has a memory, and it's not a good memory. So she tries to tell them, you know, what's going on. They're like, oh, you know, don't worry. It's you're crazy. Don't worry about it. She's like, okay, but she still thinks something's wrong. And that's pretty much it, because I can't give away too much of the story. But it's misleading because you see the book of the cover and you look on the side of the artwork. You're like, oh, it's like, you know, Lady and Tramp. It's just going to be cute and, you know, wholesome, you know, Disney book. It's not, because, you know, it's going to get dark. It hasn't got dark yet, but I think it's going to get dark in the next couple of issues.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about Tony Fleek's art, I mean, this is a guy that most people probably know his work from My Little Pony.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, you flip through the book and yes, 100%. It looks like a Disney cartoon. And so, you know, Tony's not actually doing the artwork here. Trish Forstner is, but she has that same style as Tony does, you know, and it looks very Disney-esque, very 101 Dalmatians. But if you read the solicit, it talks about this story being a cross between Lady and the Tramp and Silence of the Lambs. So, you know, 101 Dalmatians, if instead of Cruella de Vil, you had Hannibal Lecter. How terrifying would that be? So yeah, this isn't a kid's book. It's not for the faint of heart. I haven't had a chance to read it. It wasn't even on my radar till Manny was asking me about it. So yeah, I don't know that I'll check it out. But I just want everybody to be sure you realize this is not a kid's book. Did you say you got a chance to read it, Manny, or no?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed the twist and how they incorporated the humans and the dogs in this story, specifically the owner. I thought it was clever. It's something I haven't seen before, and I found it interesting, and it really raised a lot of questions about the other dogs. And I look forward to the next issue to see how that develops. It could, and see where they're headed too, as far as the role of the dogs and what in this situation.
Oh yeah, like I said, it's not dark yet, but I have a feeling it's going to get dark quick.
Yeah,
and it's definitely for people who love dogs, because I guess at the end of the thing, the writer says if you have send pictures of your dogs in, he'll put them in the back of the book. So you know, he's asking for photos of dogs.
Yeah, more importantly, we want to print pictures of your dogs. Send us those too.
Well, it's like Chew with the deal with the cats.
yeah, send token, Chase.
Oh yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, we have three dogs now. We have Tilk, Braytac, and Daniel Jackson. We're big Stargate SG-1 fans over here. And yeah, they all have their place in our home. All right, let me talk about crossover number 4 next. This is by Donnie Cates with art by Jeff Shaw, colors by D. Cuniff, and John J. Hill doing letters and design. We saw Mad Men. That was the big shock at the end of issue 3. Mike Allred's creation, Mad Men, showing up here. Expect to see more independent creators' creation show up in the pages of this. I've talked a lot about what it is in the past, how it's just a big celebration of comics from Donnie Cates, and this idea that there's a rip in the fabric of supposedly the real world that's allowed these superheroes from comics and pop culture to come spilling into their world in Denver. And they've managed to place a dome over it to kind of keep it all contained. So this is sort of a transition issue. There's not a whole lot of movement in terms of story. We do get some information about what's going on in the dome and about how the heroes that have escaped the dome, such as Mad Men, are if they're not in proximity, like the longer they've been out from under the dome, the less their powers are able to be used. So the longer they're out from under the dome, they basically become powerless at some point. So there's a little bit of information like that. It's definitely more of a transitional issue. So it kind of similar to the last issue of Department of Truth, where pretty much every issue of crossover so far, we've had a big bombshell, and this one we didn't get that. There's a couple of intriguing story points and plot points that do happen, but nothing has paid off yet. So it's a little bit in terms of you know, narrative upbeat. It's sort of on the downturn, but you know, as I say all the time, you got to have some troughs. That way, you can go back up to hit the peaks. So. Still real good. I think that I think it's still very much worth your time. The artwork by Jeff Shaw is perfect. I love the color work. The fact that people that have come from Under the Dome, people that are actual comic book characters, they have the dots that they're colored with instead of just the regular kind of paint, like the old school sort of comic book coloring when everything was printed on newsprint, where it was, you know, different colored dots that were blended together to make the colors. So they definitely stand out in terms of them being from Under the Dome or not. So yeah, it's Crossovers continues to be a really good title. All right, you're up next, Jay. What do you got?
Oh, okay. guess I'll go with Image, Scumbag. It's written by Rick Remender, art by Wes Craig, colors by Moreno Decenio. I'm saying the name totally wrong. I know I am. And then letters by Russ Wooten. So from the last issue, we know that Agent Scumbag Ernie was talking to the leader. They were offering him a deal, and we don't know about that until later on in the story, what would happen with that. But Sister Mary, the agent, has to get him out from that situation, and they have to go and infiltrate a different area I guess they're hiring people. So they're going to have to infiltrate to see why they're hiring people. I liked it, but I don't want to get too much about that because that's actually pretty funny because it kind of reminds me of a movie I saw a long time ago where they're trying to figure out how the biofuel is made. And the thing is, all I really wanted to do in the beginning of the story was go back to the party for obvious reasons. And even, the bot that was made, you know, joined the party, which is pretty funny. By the very end of the story, we find out that he has to have a moral dilemma. You know, is he going to do the right thing or not? And everybody, it's just kind of a twist at the end. It's actually pretty good. And then you find out, you know, what's going on with the biofuel, which is kind of pretty funny too. I enjoyed it. The artwork's really good. And the story is great. Like I said, it's not for kids. It's definitely adult content.
Yeah. I don't know if I like this issue. I mean, it's consistent with, in terms of tone, with what Remender's been doing the whole time, with Scorpionis and, you know, like Jay said, with the biofuel and going green. I mean, I think Sister Mary even says it at some point. They're still, at the end of the day, no matter what they're doing, you know, trying to go green or, you know, and provide cheap fuel for the world that's good for the environment. At the end of the day, they're still Nazis. But I don't know. I you talk about that moral dilemma. I just don't know if that played out the way that it necessarily should have. You know what I mean? Like all of a sudden, everything supposedly that we knew is now kind of being called into question.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like you think it's gonna go one way, but then it doesn't. And you're like, okay, yeah. There's more to the why he did all this, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, I'd rather just have it. I mean, it just made it seem like, okay, if we're going to end up with a happy, we've seen 1,000 happy endings. To me, it's more interesting to have things not have, you know, happy endings. So that's kind of where I was like, really, you're going to do that? I don't know. So we'll see. I didn't want to read the book in the first place because, I mean, just based on the preview pages that I saw and everything, it's so depraved. I'm just like, God, dude, I just don't need this in my life. But it's been so good based on the characterization, based on the interactions with characters. There's been some funny humor, and I'm not really in it for the gross out jokes and the gross out humor. But it's been interesting enough to keep me hanging on. But if it's just going to end up being a cliche with, you know, it ends up being a happy ending, then.
Oh, I don't think they're going to do that. But like I said, the best part, I think, was when he had to do the job interview because it made so much open, you know, about the character. It's like I laid it out for him.
Yeah, the best part, actually, I thought, was who's he talking to? Was he talking to Mary? I'm trying to remember who he was talking to. Or maybe he was talking to the sex. Oh, that's what it was. He was talking to the sex robot. Because there's a sex robot that doesn't want to have anything to do with it. But he's like, but you're a sex robot. You're supposed to want to, you know, have sex. Like, how can you not want to have sex with me? And she's like, well, you know, turn it around, right? Like, what if the situations were reversed? Would you want anybody who wanted to be inside you to be able to be inside you? And he's like,
yeah, that's pretty funny.
Says, He says, no, but that's because I have a notoriously tiny butthole. So that got me right there. That's why. It's not because, you know, you're heterosexual or anything. It's because you have a notoriously tiny butthole that you don't want anybody inside you. So, yeah, I mean, stuff like that. Obviously not for kids. But yeah, that tiny butthole line got me for sure. I was laughing out loud about that one. So, all right, Manny, you got one more book?
No, I got two books.
Two? Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Nuclear Family number one from Aftershock, from Stephanie Phillips, and art by Tony Chastain with colors by Jetty Mettler. I think you skipped me last round. That's what happened. I guess Jay was a little surprised.
Gotcha.
My bad. Off guard there. I was like, all right, I'll go with it.
Anywho, really interesting take on the 1950s Cold War that Phillips is trying to tap into. Pretty much answer the question of what happens if the nuclear war actually, you know, like there was like a bomb that went off in the United States. And so she does this by exploring it with a quote unquote nuclear family. So, you know, double meaning there. So kudos to her for that. I thought that was pretty slick. According to Aftershock, she based this series on the Philip K. Dick short Breakfast at Twilight, as well as also, she also cites that the Twilight Zone is inspiration for this. She's really looking to see what a quote unquote, you know, that nuclear family, how they would react to circumstances like, for example, nuclear war or being caught right in the middle. She sets this up very nicely in issue one as we get to know the family. Specifically the dad, Tim, and you know, just from working at a used car lot, we meet his daughter and some of the things she's doing, and then typical things with his wife, dinner. I mean, it's just all so straightforward and very, you know, things that we've come to know as families is doing. And then, you know, something happens and everything kind of turns upside down. Definitely this issue was more of a setup than anything else to get to know the family before the events of that are even listed here as a premise of the series. But I'm with what she did over at a Top Cow with a man among ye, I think that I'm very interested to see what she's going to do here in this story and how it's going to develop.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way about it being set up. I was hoping for a little more. Not that I'm not in for the next issue, because I for sure am. But I don't know, maybe you could look at it one of two ways. Like, oh, well, I feel like I didn't get a big enough chunk of story. The other thing is that what I got was so great, I can't wait for the next issue. So it's just kind of reminded me of Knock 'Em Dead, first issue of that, where we just weren't mm-hmm. sure, but we were hooked. So it's kind of the same way. Like, I'm just not sure what direction it's going to take, but especially the cliffhanger ending of this is like, wait, what? What's going on? So yeah, and I thought the artwork was like, I love the art style of this book. I don't think I've ever seen Tony Chastain's art before, but his art, it's got this, at least in the beginning of the issue where we're kind of seeing this sort of all American, you know, 50s America, it's got like this sheen to it, you know, like that kind of 50s postmodern look where, you know, that was when plastic was, you know, becoming a thing and Bakelite and all that kind of stuff. And so even the characters in the book, they have this look to them that's just everything is bright and shiny and clean and innocent. So the art really kind of captures the tone of America at that time. So yeah, I thought it was done really well. The colors are really great also. So can't wait to see where it goes next. Excuse me. And we were going to have Stephanie on the show, to talk about this and to talk about Red Atlantis and A Man Among You and some other stuff that she's working on. But she's under pretty big deadline pressure right now, so we kind of put that off. But we'll definitely have her back on in the future, maybe after the second issue of Nuclear Family comes out and we have a better idea. It might be even better to have her on then. But yeah, she's definitely going to come back on the show. She's looking forward to it, but we just had to delay it for a little while till she gets caught up on some stuff. So no big deal. We know deadlines come first. All right, Jay, you have one more book?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Image, Post-Americana, number 3. Story and art by Steve Scroche, color by Dave Stewart, and letters by Final Graphics. So the story... from the last one, we know that Carolyn and Mike got away from the cannibals. So now they're heading, she's heading home more or less. She gets there and meets some of her friends there. And that's when Mike finally gives a backstory of how things turned out in the story. You know, why everything is the way it is now in the world, which is awesome. Because now you get a backstory. You find out why everything is the way it is. And he has a plan, but he has to get help from someone else, but find out that maybe it's not going to work out for him. Yeah, I don't want to get too much. I mean, that's pretty much the whole storyline. The thing I like about this was he got more of the meat and potatoes of, you know, why the world is the way it is and why the other group is trying to do their thing. But I love the artwork. It reminds me of the heavy metal type thing. I like heavy metal magazine, so I like that artwork.
Yeah, Steve Scroche's art always reminds me of Jeff Darrow. Like, it's so detailed. And it's really good when he does the kind of the more visceral or gory or bloody art. You know, there's a lot of blood, eyeballs popping out all over the place and things like that. So, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to catch up on this issue. It was like last issue.
Yeah, there's definitely a big twist at the end. I mean, there's like a surprise at the end, but that's definitely pretty cool. But I'm not going to say nothing. I think Manny read it. I think he liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to get caught up on it. It was the last book I was going to read before we started recording, and I opened it up, and I looked at the first couple of pages. I'm like, oh, man, this is going to take me a while to get through it, and I didn't want to make you guys wait. So I'll probably read it right after I'm done getting this episode up.
Yeah, it definitely sets up that universe of the post, you know, Americana, a lot better. It gets you understand where some of the characters are coming from, and just kind of the Wally world that they had over at the bunker. Such a good book. I just, some of that artwork, man, is just so brutal to even just look at. I know that. It is that type of book, and I'm really enjoying it. It's really fast paced too, for as much as they're doing in it, and it really seems complicated. It's really going by real quick, but at the same time, I think this issue told us a lot.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, and that's probably my book of the week, because they finally get the backstory of what's going on and, you know, why things the way they are. Definitely love it.
All right, Manny, what do you have up next?
I have my book of the week, which should come to no surprises to anyone, because it's usually my book of the week anytime that Ice Cream Man debuts for the week. Ice Cream Man 23. This book was bananas. Well, I feel it was, at least. W. Maxwell Prince, of course, with art by Martin Morazzo. This could be a book, actually, that if you pick up a comic book, you might be turned off by, just because of the way that it's written. This month's flavor is titled Late Night Splashes, and it's the story of a late night host named Mac Benson, and the events of one night of what happened to him, told by a variety of people in his circle, which include his executive producer Brian, his intern Candace, his wife Loretta, and the animal trainer Rick Rick, we'll just call him Rick. So what makes this book very unique is that the story is told in writing. It's funny because even the preview for it, it's described as here in writing is our best attempt at describing the terrible incident that occurred tonight on the set of Tonight Tonight with Mac Benson. And it literally is that it's writing. It has every other page, a description, based on, the characters that I mentioned and what's happening at that moment. And then it goes on to, for example, it'll start off with Brian and then we get the wife's perspective and then we get the intern's perspective. And in between then we kind of see there's like a full page of art of the developing segment that they're talking about, in which something really, really, really messed up happened. And they're describing the events and what's going on now. And we also get it from his perspective, and it's totally crazy. But there's a lot of lettering. There's a lot of writing in it. So we have most of what you, the interactions with the book is going to be just reading almost a book, like a literal book instead of a comic book. So I appreciate the fact that every month Ice Cream Man it gives us a different flavor, not only in a story, the type of story, but also in the way it's presented. And so for that reason, this is my book of the week.
All right. I still haven't and don't read Ice Cream Man, so I can't say anything. Can't say anything about it. But you're an Ice Cream Man fan, Jay. Did you
check? Oh yeah, that's one of the first things I read when you sent the list. But like you said, it's always different, and that's why I appreciate it. It's never the same, you know, type of writing style you're going to get. So I liked it.
Cool. All right. Well, my last book is Generations Forge number one with a really cool Liam Sharp cover. And even though it's a number one, it's actually the second part of the story that started in Generation Shattered. So it's written by Dan Jurgens, Robert Venditti, and Andy Schmidt. Art is by a bunch of different people. We have Mike Perkins, Marco Santucci, Paul Pelletier with Norm Ratman, Bernard Chang, Joe Prado, Colleen Doran, Brian Hitch with Andrew Curry, and finishing up with Dan Jurgens with Kevin Nolan. Colors are by Hi-Fi and letters are by Tom Napolitano. So I think when the first issue came out, it was my book of the week. I can't really say this is my book of the week this time, because while this was good, it didn't reach the same level of enjoyment that I got out of the first issue. So I don't really have a book of the week this week. Nothing really stood out where I feel like I can say, hey, yeah, that's my book of the week. So it did, much like the first issue, it did feel like an actual well-planned out, well-paced and plotted event, as opposed to recent events we've had at DC where they seem kind of, let's throw everything at the wall and see what sticks. This felt like it was plotted out and planned a little better, but it just wasn't as interesting to me. The first issue where Commandy was going around and gathering up all these different DC heroes from different eras was interesting. It was fun. It kind of celebrated the history of DC Comics. This one, we saw at the end of last issue, or Generation Shattered number one, that those different heroes got thrown into different time periods, you know, most of them far in the past, a few far in the future, by Dominus, the big bad, and he kind of had trapped them there, and they're just kind of waiting for the goneness, as it's called, which really just looks like the antimatter wave to come and sweep over and kill them, basically. So they're all stuck in these different time periods, and they're trying to escape. And again, it's kind of not the most original idea. It's kind of been there, done that, seen it before. And then eventually they all gather together and do have to fight Dominus. So again, nothing new, been there, done that. And then there is a concept at the end about the way supposedly the DC universe works now. Like, we've been told that it's gone from a universe to a multiverse. And then in the pages of Dark Knight's Death Metal, now it's an omniverse where it's, you know, multiple multiverses basically. And all of a sudden we're introduced in this comic with the concept of the linear verse, which is basically telling us that no, it wasn't Bruce Wayne of Earth 2 that we were learning stories about in the Golden Age, and now in modern times it's Bruce Wayne of Earth 1. They're basically saying that it's always the same Bruce Wayne, and that for whatever reason, that it's always the same person, that these heroes are, they age in much slower time than a lot of other people do for whatever reason. And it's called the linear verse. So you wonder how much of this was what was going to be, you know, 5G. And my understanding from what I've learned most recently about 5G is supposedly we were going to have each of these one shots, you know, generation one, generation two, generation three, generation four, which is the current universe, generation five, which is the future, and generation five, that's when we would have got Jace Fox or Luke Fox Batman, and we would have got Yara Flor Wonder Woman, and we would have got John Kent Superman. But that would have only lasted a couple months, and we would have gone back to the status quo relatively quickly, back to generation four. And generation five would have been sort of what Future State is in terms of a possible future. But who knows? I mean, I'm glad we got this story. But again, it sort of seems like DC is trying to have its cake and eat it too. We've got Future State, we've got Dark Knight's Death Metal with the Omniverse, and now we've got the Linearverse, and everything matters. And the thing that I'm hearing from a lot of DC fans is if everything matters, then nothing matters. Like, if everything's on the same level, then nothing is special. So I kind of get that. And then there's sort of some pushback from some writers, specifically Joshua Williamson, has been saying, well, I don't know why DC fans think that we're not going to have continuity anymore. I don't know where they're getting that idea. Like, we're getting it from the stories, dude. The stories don't have any continuity. They're not making any sense. So what are we supposed to think? You're telling us everything matters, but there's some stories that directly contradict other stories. So I don't know. I guess basically DC just wants us to not think about it too much. But ultimately the story Generations Forged, it was fun, but it kind of, I mean, based on the first issue, I had higher hopes for this particular issue. But I kind of have a feeling that the first issue was what the first issue would have been. It was one of those generation one shots, but now with everything kind of shuffled around and shifted, they just kind of had to, okay, well now let's write the end, but it can't be the big bombastic thing that we were headed toward in the first issue. So just another instance of DC shooting themselves in the foot. And I'm not saying there's no worth to this, because it was entertaining, but it wasn't anywhere near as entertaining as the first issue. So ultimately I was a little disappointed in it. Can't give it my book of the week. So, all right. Let me give a rundown on some other titles throughout today you may want to be on the lookout for. Over at Aftershock, another book I really wanted to read and get a chance to talk about was I Breathe the Body, number two. I really enjoyed the first issue. I just haven't had a chance to check it out yet. Over at Boom, We Only Find Them When They're Dead has a bunch of, no new issues, but a bunch of reprints. If you haven't been able to find, or you've been hearing good things about We Only Find Them When They're Dead, it's the Al Ewing book. It's from Boom. He's the guy that's been killing it on Immortal Hulk. All the issues are getting another printing today. So there's a fifth printing of number one, a fourth of two, a third of three, a third of four, and a second of five. So if you missed any of the issues of We Only Find Them When They're Dead, they've all sold out. So you should be able to find a subsequent printing at your local comic shop today. At Dark Horse, You Look Like Death Tales from the Umbrella Academy, number six of six, as that miniseries comes to an end. The third issue of Batman Black and White, number three of six, is out from DC Comics today. I liked it a lot better than issue number two. Thought the stories were better, but it still is just kind of eh. To me, it's not living up to the previous Batman Black and Whites, but maybe that's just me. Future State Aquaman number two is out. That was a really great story. Future State Batman Superman number 2, Future State Dark Detective number 4, Future State Legion of Superheroes number 2, Future State Suicide Squad number 2, Future State Superman versus Lex number 2 of 3, and that's it for DC. We talked about everything else that was coming out from them. Kind of a small week from Image. I think we talked about just about all their books that are that came out today, except for Monstrous, number 32. Spawn number 315 is out today. It has a one of the covers is by Greg Capullo, so that seems like it's going to sell really well. And then there's also more. I mean, like Walking Dead hasn't like made enough money. TV, it's like one of the best-selling comics of all time, and now they're doing the Walking Dead Deluxe, where they're putting out versions of the comics two a month, and now they're in color. So Robert Kirkman doesn't have to pay anybody to write it. He never did, because I guess he wrote it himself. But it's a lot less expensive to just, you know, put out a comic that's been put out before. You're not having to pay for new art and all that kind of stuff. You just pay your color artist and pay to have it printed. And they've been selling like gangbusters, so much so that today there are second printings of the first six issues. So like unbelievable, right? Like he sold these books once in black and white when they first came out. Then he sold them again over the last few months as colorized versions, as Walking Dead Deluxe. And now he's selling them a third time as second printings. And all the second printings of issues 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, they all have a brand new cover from David Finch, where they're just like headshots of characters in the book. And not only that, there are black and white variant covers of the headshots for all of these that I think are like 1 in 50 or 1 in 25. Like they're very limited. The black and white versions of the second printings of the Walking Dead Deluxe are going to be very hard to get. Like people are already talking like they're going to go for $400-$600 in a few months when you can't find them anywhere, especially for people who are Walking Dead fanatics. So I don't know. Walking Dead just seems to be a license to print money for Kirkman, continues to be. For Marvel, and I still haven't gotten the Marvel preview, so we didn't get to talk about any of the books. I haven't read any of them yet, but we have Amazing Spider-Man number 60, Black Cat number 3. There's the latest Marvel Snapshots is Captain Marvel. There's also the latest issue of Captain Marvel from the regular series by Kelly Thompson, number 26. King in Black, Return of the Valkyries, number 3 is out. Marvel Voices Legacy, number 1. We've got Union, number 3 of 5, which I've been enjoying that series. First two issues are pretty good. Over in the X corner of the universe, Wolverine, number 10, and X-Men, number 8. Over at Valiant, we've got Bloodshot, number 11. And I think that is it. Really looking forward to next week. We're going to have a lot of great books to talk about, not least of which is going to be the first Bad Idea title. ENIAC hits stands today as you hear this. Is it, or does it come out? I can't remember. Is it next week that it comes out? I think it's next week. Sorry. Yeah. So yeah, next week, ENIAC comes out. I don't know why I was thinking it was today for some reason, but yeah. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I don't know if you heard about this, Manny, and I don't know if I should even tell the listeners, cause now they're going to be competition for us, but I will. So if you are the first customer at a Bad Idea comic shop, a comic shop that sells Bad Idea comics, if you're the first customer to purchase a new Bad Idea number 1 at that shop, they will give you a first purchaser button. Yeah. Bad Idea button to show what a huge Bad Idea fan you are. So to get to your comic shop early next Wednesday, try to be the first one in line to buy a Bad Idea
I don't have a shop nearby that sells a bad idea.
No?
Nope.
None of the shops in Fresno? What's wrong with you? What's wrong with them? You didn't tell them to sign up.
It's not up to me.
I know. You could have gone and told them. I got shops to sign up over Twitter.
Yeah.
I literally hooked shops up with Adam Freeman. Like, this is the guy you need to talk to. At Adam. And they were like, oh, okay. And then, yeah. I was like, go talk to this guy. Tell him Jay sent you. So. Well, yeah, I'm sure you'll get your hands on one at some point.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Any last thoughts on new comp? I just feel like this week was kind of meh for me.
It was it was kind of mellow, but it's interesting to see another week of dominant independent titles rather than DC or Marvel, really. And it's a trend that whatever. I'll take independent books too. I can live without.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is half the time we get our Marvel books after, I don't even get the Marvel books in time for us to read them before we record. So we're not going to be talking about Marvel. And if DC continues this trend of not being worth talking about, then yeah, all we are going to be talking about is independent books. I have no problem with that. I'm going to talk about the books that are the best mm-hmm. books out there for the week. Regardless of who publishes them. So that's why we've been talking a lot of Aftershock lately, because their books have been really good. So how about you, Jay? Any last thoughts?
Oh, no. Like I said, it was like a light week, I guess, but the independents were pretty good. I liked them. And then DC, I don't know. They got to get their stuff together. And I think we talked about this before. It's like Marvel did that way, way many years ago when they tried to do, different races, they mastered it. They did it so many years ago. They don't have to worry about catching up like DC is trying to force it down our throat. Yeah, Marvel already had figured out a long time ago.
Yeah, that's definitely true. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. As always, I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.